Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 94 of the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of ProHockeyStrength.com. That's right, this is our brand new website. We've turned HSC into the official website of SCAF, the Strength and Conditioning Association of Professional Hockey. And now I realize I need a new podcast intro. So if you know anybody who has a beautiful voice very suited to podcast intros, then please send them to me. Today's guest is Ryan Smith. Now, Ryan is not a strength coach. His background is in technology. He works for Kinduct, which is an athlete monitoring solution. They work with several NHL teams and hockey organizations to organize and manage human performance testing. I wanted to have Ryan on to get a different perspective on a familiar topic we've been exploring, and that's technology and monitoring. This summer, we talked with Christian, Joel, and Vicky, who all talked about technology and monitoring from a strength coach's perspective. I thought it'd be really cool to bring that conversation full circle. So, without further ado, here is Ryan Smith. Ryan, welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's start with how you ended up with the data for a lot of the top incoming NHL draft picks.
Yeah, so my background is technology. So I got hired to do some combines. So from the O to the Q to some youth generations and agency groups. That led to an event called the World Selection Invitational out of Philadelphia. I've done that the last 4 years now. And as part of that, they bring in hundreds of athletes from around the world, 16 unique countries, including Canada and the US, and the top prospects come to this event and play against one another in a tournament. And as a result of that, they brought us in to do, in my opinion, the most advanced off-ice assessments on the market. So we had force plates and 1080 sprints and gym awares and ballistic balls from Access to Perform and Swift Timing Gates. We had basically the best of the best gear, and we were able to monitor and assess the best athletes at the time in these protocols. Now, ironically enough, given the pandemic, we're not having an NHL combine this year. And if you look back at the historical data sets and who was at that tournament, the best of the best, the top 30 athletes coming for this upcoming NHL draft were at that event. And crazy for us is we have the data, and we've had the data, from 4 years post that. So if you look back, 4 years ago, these kids were there, and we were able to reassess post. Last year we were able to get most of them again, but we have all the data on this year's NHL combine.
And so that's super exciting, because given that there is no combine, basically your data is the combine. Now what?
Yeah, that's the hard part, right? I mean, you look at what happened with the Arizona Coyotes. It becomes really interesting, because obviously teams are not allowed to test athletes, especially right now. And so it's an interesting predicament. One of the cool things we did with this thing, because they all played against one another, we did a pretty cool study that we're going to release before the draft, that's going to look at the parameters in terms of off-ice testing and then their end game scenario. So as a result, we were able to determine acceleration over the first 5 meters, because we had the 1080 sprints, led to more goals in the tournament. So anyone who had the best acceleration in the first 5 meters were better goal scorers. Anyone who produced more power were typically defensemen. So it's a really interesting data set to sort of pinpoint, and then overlay tactical information to sort of give you a really good insight of like where these players actually fit and how that data actually translates to on-ice performance.
Yeah, I've talked about recent podcast day with Vicky Bendis. She's doing her PhD also on some of the key performance indicators of on-ice speed. So it sounds like with that data, you're kind of also looking at some of those similar things.
Yeah, Vicky and I talk a lot. She's here, so she's excited. I'm in the process of getting her some other data that she wants to look at in terms of player puck tracking and what that looks like for helping understand human performance, right, in terms of the performance of an athlete and how that translates to tactical information. So
Yeah.
I'm also like, that's super cool that you kind of have this monopoly right now on all this very important data. So I'm sure there's a lot of fun stuff going on behind the scenes with NHL teams and stuff.
Yeah. I know. And we work with a lot of teams. So yeah, it definitely helps in terms of that for sure.
I want to go back in time now too. You mentioned that your background is in technology. So can you just talk about what your background is?
Yeah. So I started as an engineer in terms of news. So I basically looked at like servers and different stuff in television. So I worked in a news television station. Then I moved, that station bought TSN. TSN is like an offshoot of ESPN. And then I became a senior technical director over there. So looking at after servers and data sources. So basically my background is in technology. So then if listeners remember, there was an ESPN sports science program, right? And I was always like, I worked at TSN. I always was seeing these spots and I was like, oh, I'm so curious to know about this stuff. Well, I reached out to Hockey Canada. Hockey Canada introduced me to Andy O'Brien and Mark Fitzgerald and all these guys who were localized to me at the time. And so I would reach out to them and I'm like, oh, what are you guys doing? You know, Andy, right, works with really top name athletes. And he's like, well, you know what? We don't have any tech right now. And it doesn't mean that he wasn't looking. He just didn't have it. And it probably were budgetary reasons at the time. I mean, now it would be different. He's in the NHL and has probably a bigger budget, but at the time he didn't. And so I basically looked back and I went to my wife and said, I think there's an opportunity here to do something. And so we remortgaged my house or our house and I bought all the gear. And for 2 years straight, I did everything for free. Tried forest blades and all different kinds of technology and just did things for free and learned. And I just took it upon myself to learn. And I had a lot of gear, like a lot of technology, and I would do events for free. And then as a result of that, that allowed me to get an NHL contract out of that. So that's sort of how it all began. So.
What exactly, with a technology background, what skills do you think you had that allowed you to be helpful to an NHL team?
Yeah, it's still today, right? When I deal with NHL teams today, it's the same thing. So a lot of these guys, and it's probably a lot of your listeners, are strength coaches by trade. That's what they are. They're strength coaches. They're not meant, I mean, they all went to school for, you know, kinesiology or master's or bachelor of science. And then they ended up getting, you know, a degree in, you know, maybe a doctorate in, you know, human performance, but ultimately they're dependent on the technology that the school has. Right. So it's not relying on, okay, the school's not going to go out and buy, you know, Catapult, StatSports, like all these different GPS or LPS technologies and saying, I want you to learn every single one of them so you understand which one does what and who provides what value, right? There's just no value to that. And so they're more like, how do you work physically and how do you help with human performance of the athlete? You know, what are the best exercises you do? What's the best stretching? How do we get the best out of the athlete and keep them health and wellness, right, for better performance? So a lot of the time, even with Andy or Fitz or and clients that I work with now, it was more or less like I come in and I streamline the process because I understand technology. I can troubleshoot issues, right, with tech and streamline the data sources. So that way it's like they come in, they're like, hey, here's the problem. We want to solve this. And I can say, okay, we're going to use this. And this is going to derive that, you know, that data that we need to provide you the like that closed solution. Instead of you just being like, we're going to collect a whole bunch of information. I don't know what's going to stick and what's not going to stick. It's more or less saying, okay, what's the problem? Let's find solutions to get there. And then those solutions that we're going to find for you are going to stay within budget. So it doesn't matter if you're an amateur strength coach and you're like, I don't have any budget. There's still stuff out there to help you. Or if you're the top NHL team and you have the best budget in the world, and then it's like, okay, it still doesn't matter. There might be a technology that's worth, you know, $200. It's still going to help you and get it at the end of the day. So that's my role really with NHL teams now, is that I'm not a strength coach, but I do work with, you know, strength coaches and ATs and PTs to help them solve solutions that they wouldn't otherwise be able to, solve without someone who can handle the technology and the data sets.
Let's paint this with an example. Maybe think back to just something, any example could be hypothetical if you need to keep things confidential with clients and whatnot. But an example of like something you saw in the data you thought could help one of your clients or a team you're working with.
Yeah. So, well, let's talk about now, because I think now data is even more important now than ever before, right? We talk about remote monitoring, remote initiatives with athletes. So leading up to the pandemic return to the bubble, a lot of teams were like, okay, well, what are things we need to make sure that we're involved with, right? So some teams believe in acute chronic load ratio. Some teams don't believe in that at all. Some teams only concern themselves with force plate information. So every team is slightly different. That's why I want to start there, because I don't want to think everyone's going to be the same way. And it's like everyone has the holy grail and it's all going to go to the same spot. But ultimately it's about, it's the data will show me things where it's like, you know, oh, here's an offshoot of like force plate information. So let's say that people have returned from 3 months off because they haven't been able to get into the gym because of the pandemic. They have to return to play. And all of a sudden, you know, we understand that asymmetries are a little bit off. And so we look at like, you know, breaking RFD, which is, you know, the rate of force development of a force plate jump. And then basically, let's say that it's, you know, normally a pro athlete would be above 10,000 units. Maybe they're in the 8,000, 7,500, which means that they don't have the explosivity of their lower body, right? So, okay, they're not going to perform as well outside of that, you know, performance. Now we have 3 weeks or 2 weeks to get them ready to actually play playoff games. So now you produce that information to that, you know, high performance director, the strength coach, and saying, hey, noticing that the trend here is that, you know, during the season, yeah, there's some fatigue, so maybe the units are not as high as it normally would, but I'm noticing that his explosivity off the force plate is not as high as it normally should be. It's actually about 25% less. You know, you should probably be programming, you know, to allude to that, right? You should probably be programming to get explosivity back. And that's what we do, right? So in that case, getting back and ready for playoff games, looking at the data sets, understanding that now, like, that's a small thing because, you know, people might look at jump height or RSI or other things. But if you understand the data, then you all of a sudden you see something like that, which is a really unique metric, then it's like, okay, 25% less of an explosive metric showing that there's, you know, they're not as strong as they used to be or not explosive. Let's use that information to program better so that they're ready to play in 2 to 3 weeks when the season begins.
Wow. That must have been a hectic couple of weeks with the teams.
All the clients. Oh yeah.
With all the teams going back to the bubble. What else? I'm just curious about that, like, return to play process, given that it is like in the moment right now. What else did you notice with players having taken so many months off and needing to get ready so quickly for games?
Well, some players lost some muscle mass. Some players have put on a lot of weight. I know a couple players that put on over 20 pounds, and that doesn't always mean it's muscle. There's some players that lost, you know, close to 10 to 15. Because every situation is different, right? Everyone goes home, and if you're based in a major hub, you probably everything was closed, right? If you were based in somewhere where it was like more rural, you probably had more of a chance to work out outside, have your own gym at home because you're more in the outskirts of the major hubs. So it was all unique in terms of the area where they lived, right? And then what access they had to equipment. And then, you know, working with some, so we have the pro teams, and then we have the gyms in town. So I know some gyms would provide gear to the people at home, right? So, okay, they can't come into my gym. The gear's just sitting there. I'm going to let you rent my equipment or give you my equipment technically to work at home. So returning to the bubble is a really fascinating one. Given our role with Kinduct, I mean, we do have a ATP builder inside of us, inside of our platform. So you could, like, our teams use the app to derive programs. But, you know, as I just alluded to, you know, one guy had home gym at home and he can do whatever he wants. And then the other guy is like, I got nothing. I got, you know, a chair, a desk, and a bed. Like, let me know what's going on. So every situation was different. And that was, I think that was probably the biggest struggle. Not necessarily for me, but for the high performance directors and strength coaches getting returned to play.
What is Kinduct and what is your role there?
Yeah, okay. So Kinduct is an athlete monitoring solution. So inside of Kinduct, there's multiple facets where someone might use it. So you might use it strictly for strength and conditioning. You might use it for strength and conditioning and PT or return to play work. You could look at it at AT work. So there's an EMR inside of it. EMR is an electronic medical record solution. There's reporting tools inside of it. So we have a baked-in solution with Tableau, which teams utilize a lot. And then there's training programs, there's rehabilitation programs, there's a 3D motion or a 3D animation library inside of it. So we look at like injuries or injury prevention. So AT or PT or a strength coach can use that to like do a 3D animation video with the athlete. We also have calendar and messaging and stuff like that. So primarily what it is a way to agnostically pull in data from different sources, be that, you know, LPS or RFID tracking. So that's like, you know, player tracking on the ice or heart rate monitoring, or we talked about force plates or gym wares or anything like that, that we would be pulled in. And then basically depict that data with any tactical or human or other data that we want to do. And then we have a wide range of other tools like journaling and surveys that we can push out to players that then come back into the platform, alert the coaches to some issues that are on the play, in terms of the data sets. And then we have another solution with Gatorade that looks at hydration scales. So it's like, it's a solution with Gatorade that basically the players step on, and it'll give you like a cue if they're hydrated and how dehydrated they are and stuff like that. So it's basically an all-in-one solution for our teams. My role is twofold. So obviously I do all the testing. We alluded to that. So any testing. So I'll go and work with NHL teams or our clients and do like, I'll bring my gear. I'll work with their gear on site. So during like rookie camp or main camp. So I'll go down and work with teams on site. The other role is obviously day-to-day working with them. So we have, I think, three or four teams now still in the playoffs that are still working. So I'll work with them on their data sets and some game load evaluations to help them understand the day-to-day sort of data sets that are coming off of the players, be that in the game or on their days off and what that looks like. So primarily I'm a technologist helping teams with technology and data, or I'm working with teams with the athlete testing on that side of things.
Okay, got it. So basically, you take all of the possible data you can collect from heart rates to subjective scores to force plates, and Kinduct is the hub where you can then look at that information in one place and kind of decide what to do with that information.
That's right. And then you can overlay injuries, or you can overlay like anything else and then program on top of it. That's the idea of any AMS, but that's where we excel in.
So, cool. Yeah. So that is the definition for our terms of an athlete management system.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Do you do a lot of data science, like with the information that comes in? Like, do you have like a data science, computer science background at all?
I personally don't. I can run scripts. When I was in the NHL, I did a lot of that. But we do have a data science team inside of our team. And one of the things that we've done a really good job with is, we have a load scenario tool, and our data science team came up with it. So the load scenario tool, the way it works is every team has different, variations of load, right? So some will look at external load, which is your XY data. Some will look at internal load, which is your heart rate information. Some will look at a load in terms of like perceived exertion, right? The RPE stuff. Some people look at travel load, right? So how far does a team travel, and do they go across time zones, and how far do they go, right? Some will look at like a ratio. So, right. So some will say, what's their physical load, you know, divided by the mechanical load. And they'll say, okay, that's a PM ratio as an example. And so everyone is different in terms of their load scenarios, but our data science team has done a really cool job where it said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to look at historical data. We're going to have the end user, like the strength coach or the high performance director, put in what they think the upcoming week's going to look like. And then it's going to look at that information and load out saying, okay, here's what it looks like for the next, 7 to 14 days. So based upon historical data, this is where they're at today. You're putting the parameters of what you think should be upcoming. And then when the data actually comes in, it'll alert them to say that's too much load for them or that's too high. And that'll be all like on their end, like in terms of the high performance director, the strength coach may say, I want them to be in this range. And then it'll alert them to look at that. So that's one thing that our data science team does. The other thing that we're in the process of doing, because it hasn't been released to the NHL yet, is that the player and puck tracking. So our data science team will do a lot of work with player and puck tracking. We have a lot of experience in player and puck tracking. We did some work with the KHL data from last year with Wise Hockey. And basically we have a energy gauge. So we do that with the NFL and the NBA now. We have a player energy gauge, and we'll do that with the NHL as well. So that'll be parameters about how acceleration, deceleration's, speed, distance traveled, hits received, all those sort of parameters that will allow us to look at indications for a gauge. If they're, think about your fuel tank on your car is at 100, if you fill it up, I'm at 100, but as you drive, it's sort of low, it lowers. It'll be the same thing in terms of in game, be able to alert the coaches to like who should be playing and who shouldn't based upon the data sets that's coming in.
It's so exciting to hear about what technology is coming in the field. And so I'm wondering where you see technology going the next year, next 1 to 5 years, and how you think strength coaches can be proactive about learning how to integrate technology, learning how to accept technology, maybe learning how to work with technology experts like yourself, rather than, obviously needing to learn everything, which would be a bit unrealistic.
It is unrealistic, and no one should be expected to do it. I have lots of guys who are in the NHL who I've worked with who will be to a man will say like, listen, technology is not my forte. Like they have trouble with their cell phones. That's reality of it, right? They embrace that they need data. I think that's first and foremost. So even if you're a coach who's just starting out, there's easy ways of collecting information. You don't have to have the best timing gates in the world. You don't have the best force play. You don't have the best, you don't have to have all these other things. It's just streamline your process to understand it better. But technology can help you assist to make your athletes better, to keep yourself and them accountable and all that stuff. But where do I see in the next year to 5 years? So as an example, and I'm not one to necessarily pump myself too much, if you ask anyone, that's not really the case, but in the next year I've been working on a project for the last 2 years. It's an app, and it's meant for strength coaches, and it's meant for coaches, and it's meant for athletes. And what better timing now with pandemics is that all this is going down. So inside the application, it's a really affordable application. It'll collect and assess people on the fly using AR and using other tools inside the app. So all you have to do is use your phone, put it over top of an athlete. You have an iPad, put it over top of your athlete. It'll collect biomechanical information. It'll also do stopwatches in it, metronomes in it. It'll look at historical data. So I have lots of data. We already talked about that. It'll ping against that in terms of other data sets. So I can say, okay, here's a 27-year-old defenseman. He's a left-handed defenseman. I want to pull against that guy. So it'll allow you to pull against data sets that exist and say, this is where they are. And it goes all the way down to, 7, 8-year-olds. So, and not that I think that's really important at 7 or 8, I think development, just having them engaged in the process is key, but also keeping them engaged and keeping communication with parents and stuff is also key. And that'll be part of it. So there'll be leaderboards and player comparison. So I think that's, because I'm building it, I think that's where it's going. But there's other initiatives where it's like, we talk about player and puck tracking coming, optical tracking is getting a lot better. So that'll be part of things. I think, you have ways of collecting information via the camera. It doesn't matter if it's a cell phone or an iPad, like I was talking about the app, or if it comes to in-game. So you're talking about just using the camera that's on the game to be able to collect information on, acceleration, deceleration, and speed and distance based upon the camera feed of the game itself at the lower levels. And I don't mean at the NHL level, I mean at that lower level that can provide better value for our coaches to understand like tactical performance.
I think at any level, even in youth, I think the point of getting technology, like you said, with like things like leaderboards, like it's not necessarily to like get like the edge for like kids, of course, but when you're starting to collect data, you're starting to like just get a better understanding of like how the things you do have impacts, right? Like what gets managed gets managed. Like you're just kind of cultivating, you know, data collection and kind of the method of science as a way to get a better idea of what you're doing. So my question is, what do you think a strength coach who works with like middle schoolers, like younger kids, younger players, like how can they maybe use these concepts to help them, or maybe use certain technologies, even if they're like not necessarily technology, even just like stopwatch, little things like that to help them?
It's a great question. So there's a couple, we've recently signed a lot of academies, hockey academies. So, and they'll get released soon. If you go to our website, you'll see who they are. And they're all hockey academies for the most part. And we've signed some really big ones. And a lot of the time I'll be brought into the call from the sales guy and he'll say, okay, Ryan, can you just talk them through this process? So it goes to your point where it's like, you know, some schools, academies have kids from grade one all the way to, you know, grade 12. And I always say to them, okay, one thing that I think a lot of people struggle with, and even at the top end, is standardization of collecting information. So as I said to one team, one academy who have young kids, I said, you know, as an example, your grade one to grade 3-year-old. So that's like, you know, my son's 5, so he'll be 6 next year, he'll be grade 1. So that's grade to 6 to 8, okay? I said, don't use a stopwatch for them. What I would do for them is teach them what the standardization tests are going to be moving forward. So I'm going to do an on-ice weave drill. So anyone who's done a weave drill understands that, you know, they go through the cone, they weave through, they pick up a puck, they weave back, and they go through it, okay? So rank them out of 5, right? Did they do it right? Did they listen to the protocol? Give them something back that's easy. And that takes no technology at all, right? That literally is just like, go to the blue line, go through the pylons, do what you're supposed to do, and I'll rank you out of 5. Did you do the protocols correctly or not? So you do that, you know, grade 1, 2, 3. Perfect. Grade 4 comes along. They're a little bit more mature. They've done the drill for 3 years. Now we're going to use a stopwatch. So stopwatch is only going to give you an indication of like how fast they're going. But now you got a good idea of like, yeah, they understand the drill. I've standardized it for them. They understand what's happening. And now grade 4, they're good. 5. And then now you start getting a linear development curve, which is really, really important. Because one thing I think what I'm finding is that lower level that has no technology, they haven't standardized anything. So there's no linear development. You can't, like, you think about sending kids to school, or when you and I went to school, we got a report card. So I know I got an A in math, or I got a B in math. I got an 87. I got a, you know, I know what my curve is. I know how well I did. I know what I did. That doesn't exist right now. And because we don't standardize anything, we don't standardize the process to help us understand linear development and what they're struggling in and what they're performing, like what they're excelling in. So start standardizing things, start looking at ways to improve the process, and start like at the youngest age possible to standardize things, because that only helps them down the line in terms of progression. Because the skills development, those guys are doing their job in terms of like making the game unique, smaller areas of play, all that other stuff to be creativity. But when it comes to like that strength program, standardization and data collection that is useful is linear development and understanding how they're developing as they get older, and looking at like maturity levels, right? Because at some point puberty gets into play and they grow at different rates of areas, and then you get into relative scores, which is really important. But like if they're not doing the drills right, it doesn't matter if you're doing relative scores, because if they've never done the drill before, then all of a sudden it becomes like, ooh, well, they finished 18th out of 18, but you know, they've never done this before. So is that really like, are they really 18th? Like you start questioning yourself, and that's where it's sort of, you know, it's you go down a rabbit hole that you don't want to get into. That's why standardization early enough helps everybody. So if a player moves from your program to mine and we're still standardized and we're talking about it, right? We're all standardizing this. then my player can go to your program and you still feel like, okay, he knows what I'm doing or she knows what she's doing and she's going to perform or he's going to perform at a level that I can count on, that data is going to make sense. And I know that it's actually good data.
That was well said. I think in the industry, we're starting to see that more with, you know, most higher level teams are doing flying 10s and 10 yard sprints and, you know, we're doing vertical jumps. But yeah, I agree that that's such a difficult process. Like, hey, everyone agree, let's all do this, you know?
And you're not all going to agree, right? But let's just say like everyone should do a vertical jump. Everyone should do a broad jump. Everyone should do like a 5-10-5. Everyone should do a 20. Like even if you decide to do, I'm doing these other five as well, standardize something so everyone's on the same page, because, you know, that's all about development, right? Just developing the players. It's about helping one another, right? That's the idea. Like you're not going to have an athlete go from grade one to, you know, their end of their NHL career with you the whole time. It's not going to happen.
Right. And so is one of the things that you're trying to do with Conduct is to start, you know, you're working with all from NHL all the way up to younger groups. And like you said, academies. So is that something you're trying to do, is like start get into that culture of standardization?
Yes, 100%. I mean, that's one thing, you know, initially when we started this podcast, we talked about the athlete testing. The reason I do a lot of the testing I do, and a lot of it's, I do stuff way outside of what the NHL Combine does. But if you notice, all my tests, will do the NHL Combine on top of what else I do. So I do some rotational throws with the med balls. I do some reaction tests with lights. I do some 1080 sprints off the ice with 15 and 30 kilos, like a 20-meter sprint. NHL would never do that, but I'm doing it because I know the value in the data. But I'm also doing a 20-meter sprint. I'm doing a 5-10-5. I'm doing the chin-ups. I'm doing the broad jump. I'm doing the vertical jump using a force plate. I've taken what they want as a standardization and using that, so it already exists, I can use that, and then I'm going to give you some extra data that you wouldn't already get.
And then that's to bring things full circle. That's how you end up in the situation you are, where now you and your company are the ones who have the latest combine data, basically, for this incoming draft class.
That's right.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect way to bring things full circle. Any closing thoughts on any of this? Where can people reach out, say hi, and learn more?
Yeah. No, I appreciate you having me on here. Like, big fan of what you're doing and everyone that's been on it. I'll give you my Twitter and all my stuff posts, but mostly I just want people working together, communicating with one another and helping one another out, especially in a time like now. Never better opportunity to help one another out and start working together to help all of us become better people. So
that's perfect. That's exactly the message we need right now, is to bring people together and not break them apart.
Yeah.
So thank you, Ryan, so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it once again.
Yeah, no worries.
Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. We'll put all of Ryan's contact info, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., on prohockeystrength.com. So don't forget to head over to the site. We have some brand new free content, a free article from Vicky Bendis, free article from Devin McConnell, a video series going on right now from Mike Potenza. On the member side, we have a warm-up program from Alan Selby with the Calgary Flames. So please head on over to prohockeystrength.com to get access to all of that. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening, and we will talk soon.